Welcome to week two of Ministry Without a Collar. For those that missed last week, I'm Martha Metzler. I am a mom to three hilarious boys, wife to an insanely smart and good-looking man named Sam. And I have done everything from worked in a cubicle to youth ministry, where I told folks last week that I even put professional Christian on my business card, and have been a stay-at-home mom, and then now am a high school therapist. We talked last week that, you know, we can, because we're called to, do everyday ministry within and outside of the constraints of our everyday job. We talked about the tent makers of the Bible, Priscilla and Aquila and Paul. And we talked about how we, like they did, can weave ministry, like hospitality, into our everyday interactions with our friends, our coworkers, our neighbors, and local nonprofits around the town. We talked about how our purpose is to do God's work, whether it's professionally in the church or whether it's us as lay people. But I also know that sometimes we can get overwhelmed because the pain is and the hurt is so great in our world, and we sometimes just feel paralyzed, like, where do we start? So I shared a quote from author Glennon Doyle, and she said, "Find whatever breaks your heart, and that is your purpose." And so last week I'd given folks journals to and kind of gave the charge to carve out time for reflection this past week, to truly search and hear God's voice over what breaks your heart and what he wants, what path he wants for your purpose in that hurt. So I got to ask, did anyone find that reflection and stillness time with your journals challenging or life-giving? Any folks from last week? Remember, I work with high schoolers. I'm really good with uncomfortable silence. I know that I had to carve it out in the mornings. Like I do, like that is, it's just such a discipline of mine, because that is the only time that is quiet in my house. And so that is my time to carve it out. And it is a challenge every day when that alarm goes off early in the morning and I don't want to get up before everybody else. But for me, that's how I find purpose in my marketplace, in my workplace. Yeah. Okay.
Something I didn't do. My name was born there. And so I often go to Prima River. And I was reading when I need some stillness and quiet within. And I was, because we talked about hospitality, I read this passage from her. She was talking about a space of love and hospitality. And she says,
I like that. I love that. I know. So I hope that, you know, last week you had, it just helped open your eyes and awareness to chances for hospitality, chances for interday interactions to be ministry. So this week we are going to be focusing on what Scripture says about work and diving into one businessman, Abram, and one businesswoman, Lydia, of the Bible. And so ladies first, let's talk about Lydia. So Lydia, we meet her in Acts 16, as she's described as the seller of purple cloth. Y'all, that's so specific. So not red cloth, not orange cloth, don't even get me started on polka dots, just purple cloth. But she was really successful, so that makes me think like purple was the new black in biblical times. But the region where she was from, Thyatira, was the only place with water that was suitable for dyeing purple cloth. No other place could produce that purple cloth. So Lydia had her eyes open for that opportunity. She was an entrepreneur, and she mastered that dyeing of the purple cloth and made it her place in the community. Hey. We know she was exceptional in business as a woman for that time period, because we see that she owned her own spacious home and she had people that worked for her. But what's so cool to me about Lydia is that she not only had eyes to seek for business opportunity, but for faith and relational opportunity as well. So in Acts 16, 12 through 15, we see, so Paul's coming into town, and it says, on the Sabbath, we went outside to the city gate to the river, where we expected to find a place of prayer. We sat down and began to speak to the women who had gathered there. One of those listening was a woman from the city of Thyatira named Lydia, a dealer in purple cloth. She was a worshiper of God, and the Lord opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. When she and the members of her household were baptized, she invited us to her home. If you consider me a believer in the Lord, she said, come and stay at my house. And she persuaded us. So what can we learn from Lydia? One, do you have eyes for opportunity? Are you constantly seeking with an entrepreneur spirit? So one of my college roommates, Joanna, Allison knows her, she started a bone broth company out of Charlotte. And if you're wondering, yes, bone broth is as weird as it sounds. It is an organic broth that you like sip in a mug. It's supposed to be good for you. But she wanted to make healthy food, but with a purpose. So she gives 15% of all of her profits to sex trafficking prevention and outreach, because she found out that Charlotte is one of the top cities for sex trafficking because of its location on the highway, and that broke her heart. So she found her purpose in that heartache within the marketplace. So sure, Lydia lived in an area that was kind of set up for her to succeed, but she mastered her trade and she was successful, but not at the sacrifice of growing in her faith. She was at the river, and instead of seeing Paul's teaching or interaction as an interruption or an inconvenience, she opened her heart and was transformed. She fit that time for faith within her business hours. How can we do that? Do we compartmentalize faith and work, or do we allow them to intertwine? Are we annoyed when faith opportunities come up during 8 to 5, during work hours? Do we see it as an inconvenience? Are we keeping our faith in a nice little separate box that we live out on Sunday because Monday and Friday is work time? We're meant to operate as whole believers, y'all. That means no compartmentalizing. It means being a Lydia who, while working out at the river, saw teaching available and then let that transpire into the ministry of hospitality as she invited them into her home. We don't have to be dealers in purple cloth to be a Lydia. The sky's the limit, folks. Like, you can do yellow cloth. But I think that it is a natural thing in our society to keep faith separate from work. You work Monday through Friday. You worship on Sundays, Saturdays for football and barbecue. But what if we didn't? What if we lived it out every single day? Now, I'm not saying you have to force yourself kind of on, you know, your faith on everybody you come in contact with in work. True story. So I met this guy once, kind of right out of college, or I think it was in college, and he was saying, you know, I really want the first thing people to know about me is that I'm a Christian. And so, Liz, I'm going to use you. Sorry. Y'all, this is how he introduced himself and shook. Allison, do you know who I'm talking? Okay. This is how he shook his hand, y'all. Christ died for you. And he would like pierce his finger into your wrist. And I was like, oh, let go of me. Okay, you don't have to do that for people to know you're a Christian. It was the weirdest experiment in my life. Okay, so you don't have to do that. But what if the way we interacted with our coworkers, our boss, our board, our employees, or our customers, what if the love of God was so evident in us and our interactions with them that they immediately knew we were a man of God, we were a woman of God, without us even having to say a word or do a weird handshake? I think that's how we can do ministry in the marketplace, to be the aroma of Christ and not just where it's a popular scent, like at church. So now we're going to go old school and look at Abram. So in Genesis 13, we see that Abram is a successful dealer in livestock, gold, and silver. But he also had a lot of grit. Because in Genesis 13, we see that even though Lot got the better, fertile land, Abram labored so hard that he became even more successful. He was fearless in obeying God, even if it meant leaving what was comfortable, and he was successful in finishing the task, even if the circumstances weren't the best or the land wasn't the most fertile. So here's a tough question that I had to really wrestle with when I was studying Abram. You can even journal about it in the journals I gave you last week. Do you show perseverance like Abram? Even when you aren't handed the most fertile land or the most ideal work situation? Do we show grit and perseverance even when we don't gel with the people we work with? Or what about when we're judged unfairly in a review? Or if we're stuck selling a product in a tough economy? What if your less than situation, whatever it is, are you working with the same perseverance as Abram? Are we still doing our best? Are we still thriving, even if our work situation doesn't look like how we thought it was or what we feel like we deserve? So there is a really cool series called Reframe that Regent College did, and my incredibly talented brother worked on it. And they interviewed a bunch of business leaders worldwide. And I think the guy, kind of how people weave ministry and the fact that they are a believer into the marketplace, into their business world. And what struck me so much is the last guy that's interviewed. And I want to share that with you, if I can get it to work. Not that guy. Don't worry. We'll get to him if you recognize him.
The boomer generation is discovering there's a disenchantment of having only a professional identity, because they're unemployed, they're retired. Well, having been a CEO of a big company, to then discover that you're nobody is waking up people to say, but was I a fool to think that my identity was only professional?
So I think as Christians, we actually should be the best visionaries. We should be the have hope in making a difference when all others are without hope. We should be people that can articulate that vision, because we're living in that hope. We're living in that vision of a new kingdom.
We have a lot of people who say, well, that sounds like a really great vision, but I'm in cubicle land and I don't have any of this thing that you're calling vocational power. But even those with relatively limited vocational power still can think a lot about the workplace culture and the type of work that's being done.
I try to talk to as many Christian CEOs as I get the opportunity. And I ask them, are your Christian employees good employees? And I have to say, mostly, they say, no, they're not. They're really interested in going to a Bible study, a church service meeting, or whatever, but they don't really get into their work. I think it was Dorothy Sayers who said the first duty that a Christian religion imposes on a carpenter is that he should make good tables, not that.
So that's what struck me the most, is that he should make good tables. While you're resting, get to work, will you? Are we producing? Are we working? Are we like Abram, giving our best, even if we feel like our situation isn't ideal or we're not doing something glamorous? Are we doing our best? The scripture gives us guidelines for everything in our life, from raising children, everyday ministry, marriage, church leadership, and work. But again, I have to ask the tough question. Do the people you work with, the people I work with, do they know that we're believers in Christ? And this is an important question to ask, because if I had to guess, a lot of us would say we are different people at work than at home or with our friends. And why do you think that is? And should it be that way? Are we examples of holiness in every area of our life? And I want to actually kind of hear an answer. Why do you think it is that we may act differently at work? That we might not be an example of holiness or all the fruits of the Spirit at work, like we might be at church or at home or with our friends?
Judgment.
Perceived weakness. Yeah. He said, we're worried about offending one person in the room. And I think what's, unfortunately, a lot of people have sort of ruined for us a little bit, maybe the guy giving that crazy handshake, or, you know, we would joke that we were waiting for somebody to run out of church and whack us with the Bible and say, like, truth hurts. We don't have to be, like, you know, on the pulpit, we can love like Christ loved at our work. People are hungry for us to love like he did. They're hungry for them to see Christians with compassion, with integrity, with eyes to see everyone like Christ did. Everyone that we work with should feel the love of Christ, even if we don't speak of it. They should be able to feel that through their actions, through our business interactions. Are we closer or no? No. Okay. So I'm just going to, okay, so I had a video, and if you YouTube Don Flo, he spoke to a group in Seattle about how he weaves being a Christian into his business. And he says, it shapes everything I do, even from the top. But what was cool is he told a story about a guy in his service department that lived it out. The family was on his way, on their way down to Disney World, and their car broke down. So this poor dad who had been, they said they'd been saving up for years to go to Disney World. It was their kid's dream. They only get a week off. They can't reschedule. So they called their AAA, and he'd said, well, you know, this Flo service station is the only one open this late. It was like 9 p.m. And so they called. The dad explained their situation. And there was a service department tech said, you know what, like, I'll work through the night tonight on your car. Your family can come. We'll pull out a couch. Come, I'll work. We'll work on this car, and we'll get you going in the morning, and we'll get you guys to Disney World. And Don Flo didn't even know about this. But they come, you know, once a year they do this sort of going the extra mile award. And somebody, this family wrote it in and said, you've got to know what your service tech did for us. And so, you know, Don Flo went to him and said, you worked through the night for this family. I can't believe you. We're giving you this award. And he said the service tech was like, well, isn't that what we're supposed to do? And I love that. Isn't that what we're supposed to do? Yes. Not as a Flo Auto employee, but as a Christian. The answer to that question should always be yes. You're like creepily hiding behind me.
Just ask me if the videos work.
Did the videos work?
Yes!
All right! I don't even need that one anymore. Okay. So, you know, how can you imagine how we can change our work culture if we lived out the fruits of the Spirit at work? If we lived out patience, love, kindness, perseverance. If we lived those out at work and someone asked, why are you doing this? Why are you helping me with my task, even though I know your task list is growing? Why do you keep bringing muffins to the break room? Why do you, CEO, boss man, why do you write letters, handwritten letters of encouragement, an attaboy or attagirl to your employees? How did you keep your cool when that customer just yelled at you for 30 minutes? Why do you keep inviting lonely coworkers to work? How do you act so loving to that board member who keeps telling you things that need to change but gives no suggestions? How? Isn't that what we're supposed to do? Yes. Think of the way that we can transform our work culture. And even beyond that, if we operate with holiness and passion and integrity in the name of Jesus in our businesses, think of the impact that we can have when we ask other businessmen and businesswomen to join us in a cause, the cause that may break your heart. They'll know it's the real deal because of the way you've been living your life. They'll want to walk alongside of you and join you. Take Jesus into every business transaction, every boardroom, into every email with you. If decency and integrity become the norm because you set the stage for that, How incredible would your work culture be? Think of the current and new potential employees that you would attract and that God could use you to transform. So there's this great, let's see if Dixon was right. So there is this great story, and I'm sure maybe a lot of you saw it on the local, you know, it's not local, the news, it was a while ago. But I think that both of the businessmen in this video have a lot to be admired. And I'll, it's a quick little clip. Maybe. Oh, I already did it. Hold on. I tried to skip the ad. This talk is sponsored by Wendy's. I just want to make sure you guys are all hungry after this. There you go.
Working, going to school, he wants to be a Marine one day. And just listen to what happened to him on the night before his first job. Walter Carr of Homewood, Alabama, is getting ready to start his first day on the job, his first job. But the night before he started with that moving company, his car broke down. So Walter started walking 20 miles to get there, starting at midnight. And he made it to the home he was supposed to pack up, the Lady family of Pelham, Alabama. It was 2 days later, his boss at Belknap Moving walked Walter over to a group of cars. One of those cars was about to be his.
This is my car. I like it to be your car. I really think that, it's a much better future for you than it is for me. I could think it a better way to part ways with this.
Walter says he hopes his story helps others. And right there, the fact.
So I love that story for a lot of reasons. One, I think that young man, his commitment to walk, he was so excited about his first job, the first day of his first job. He walked 20 miles, that commitment. And then I think about the CEO who heard about the story and the generosity and giving spirit that he experienced. Now, I'm not saying you have to walk 20 miles to go to work, and I'm not saying you have to give your employees a car, although feel free to send that link to my boss. I've always dreamed of having a vintage pickup truck. But do we have the commitment and integrity to respect our job and work hard, even if it's not something that we thought we'd be doing? Do we give it our all? Because that's what God calls us to. And if you're in a position of power at your company, do you treat every employee who works for you with a generous and giving spirit? Because to whom much is given, much is expected. This idea of ministry in the marketplace has really taken off. And there are institutions who teach on how to live out your Christian life within the business world. And so as I was diving into this and researching, I found this great article, and it's Ed Silvoso. And he says, in his article titled Ministry in the Marketplace, he said, most marketplace Christians already know that their ministry and their occupation are somehow connected, but they don't comprehend exactly how. Even though they sense they have a call to ministry, they hesitate about exchanging their secular setting for a religious one. Quite often, they're told that this vacillation is due to a lack of faith, or worse yet, an attachment to worldly things. This indictment leaves them confused because deep down they feel like their spiritual destiny, it's in the marketplace. The notion of doing ministry without a collar in the marketplace has become popular and studied for a reason. Your spiritual destiny is where you are. It's in your workplace. It's in your business. And like we talked about last week, it's in your interactions with your neighbors, with your friends, with the ones you pass on the street. So what does the Bible say about work? If you look at Colossians 17 and then again in 23. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And then in 23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters. Since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward, it is the Lord Christ you are serving. We're supposed to work with all of our heart. I think that that is what's really convicting for me. Because there are certain aspects of my job that I don't love. I don't really love all of the parent emails that I get all the time at midnight or 3 a.m. because their kid didn't get the grade that they like. But am I responding with love and grace? Am I laboring in response to those emails the same as when I am weeping with a student who is in a serious valley? I hope that I give my all because I'm called to, no matter what task it is within my job. And so I think that, you know, as Christians, we can and we need to do ministry in the marketplace with our interaction and our work ethic and our entrepreneur spirits. But I would be failing you guys if I didn't talk about rest. So if we look at Genesis 2, on the seventh day, God had finished the work he'd been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all of his work. And then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. Y'all, even God rested. He loved a day off. Are you honoring the gift of the Sabbath? Are you allowing your cup to be refilled and enjoying the fruits of your labor? What about your family? What about some of the nonprofits that you have a desire to serve? Are you guys taking a break from work? So how do you guys like to rest? I know you got to be tired of my voice.
Spending time with my wife.
She's quite lovely. Yeah. How about doing laundry for my wife? I'm just kidding. So your wife can rest. Just kidding. All right. What else? Walking, being outside. That's how I rest too. And being a family.
Giving yourself permission to take a nap.
Yes. Nap time for all.
Reading.
Reading. For fun.
Yeah.
Hallmark movies. There's no shame. It's no shame. My college roommates and I would curl up and watch Lifetime all Saturday. Don't you deny it, Allison. How else? Okay, so with all of those, let me ask you this. Why do we feel guilty? Why were you guys not proudly being like, oh, I take naps. I love a nap. Hallmark movies. That was like really painful. Why is it hard for us to rest? Why is there like a tinge of guilt or shame when you tell your family, I'm gonna go take a nap. Or you tell your boss, like, hey, I actually have a lot of vacation time left. I'm gonna take it.
Everything is advertised 24/7.
Yes.
You get information and things 24/7.
Yes. 24/7. He did. That's the nursery saying, please come get your child. He has not stopped screaming since you dropped him off. Why else? Why do you guys think it's so hard for us to rest, to feel guilty about resting, for enjoying the gift of the Sabbath? God gave it as a gift. It shouldn't be something we force ourselves to take.
Is there anything else
to get? Yeah, it does. Hebrews, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works, just as God did from his. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest, so that no one will perish by following their example of disobedience. Everything does need to get done. But at the cost of what? Of burning out? Of bitterness taking hold? Because you haven't been able to rest? He gave it as a gift, and I'm sure just not for fun, because he knows we need it. We operate as whole beings. No more compartmentalizing, no more burning out. We need rest to refill our cup. Something that I talk to my teachers about is, you know, all day long, all week long, we pour our cup out, little by little. Every email, every crucial conversation you're having at work, every stressful event, it's more pouring out. And then by the end of the week, your cup is empty. And what do you have to give? Nothing. That rest is built in so that we can have our cup refilled. And we have something to pour out. And I always joke with my teachers. I always say, you know, if anybody is a Parks and Rec fan, they do this series called Treat Yourself, where they pick a time and they do, like, you know, indulgent things, like going shopping during lunch. And they're like, it's Treat Yourself time. And so I talked to my teachers, and I said, you got to treat yourself. And it's so funny because some teachers will walk by me in the hall and they'll be like, it was so hard. But I went walking, I left work, I turned the lights off, and I went for a walk, or I went to the gym, and all I could hear was your voice inside going, treat yourself, girl. I'm like, okay, I'll take it. If that's the voice inside your head, I'll take it. Yes, please. Okay, why we sleep. Yeah. Hi. Right. Give yourself permission. And I know it may not be in human nature to rest, especially in our culture of go, go, go. And we're, you know, constantly connected with smartphones and emails coming in throughout all hours. But guys, we aren't called to human nature. We're called to pursue godly nature. So rest, friends. I plan on spending my day snuggling with my boys and not checking work emails at all today. And it'll be so good. And I'll go into work tomorrow ready to give my all. Okay. It is so true. You take those beats of rest. You don't have to stay in it, but you can just turn off. My friend likes to call those manna moments. They're like receiving manna, and they're just turning off. Even if it's just catching, being able to close the bathroom doors and just get a little bit of quiet. Or turning off the lights for those 20 minutes and putting a bandana over your eyes and turning off the world for a second. So yes, let's work wholeheartedly for the Lord's pleasure. Let's change our work culture by being, you know, living in an above reproach way and godly in our words and deeds, but let's also remember to rest. And let's respect that gift of rest, because that alone can change your work culture. If we pursue God's call to Sabbath, we're giving other permissions to do the same. So rest today, and remember you're an ambassador for Jesus in your workplace with every interaction and every email. And I love the idea, if we're giving ourselves permission, and you know that gives others permission to do the same. And if you are in a position of power at your job, how incredible would it be for your employees to get that email at 5 o'clock on Friday saying, I'm going home to be with my family. Y'all go home to do the same. Go. Enjoy your weekend. Take a Sabbath. And they would see that in and itself can change a work culture. I think that you guys will have fun looking into, if you just, honestly, at this point, if you just Google ministry in the marketplace, it's become such an incredible research playground of all of these incredible articles on ways you can live it out, and I encourage you to do that. I think we're wrapping up, but I do, if you guys have any questions or any feedback on ways that you live out ministry in your workplace, or you've seen others do it, I would love to hear that just for our last few minutes. And if not, we can all just stare at each other and rest. Yes?
Well, I have an example of how someone else did
ministry. Awesome. Sometimes you need the others to help fill your cup, too. And it's also okay to ask, too. Hey, I'm running dry. Anybody else have any good examples? I always have to reread my emails, and if I see that there's more than 20 exclamation points, I should probably redo it. If half of it's in caps locks, I'm like, I'm going to sit on it for a little bit. Well, thank you. Oh. You'd gotten it out of your system. I like that. I like that. All right. Well, thank y'all for coming. Next week, we're going to be talking about the mamas and the papas and how we can do ministry without a collar in parenthood. All right? Yes. I love that. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, thank y'all again so much. I hope you enjoy the rest of your Sunday and the sun comes out.